Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. In this episode, I want to ask the question, is the Chinese property market the largest Ponzi scheme in world history? Now, that might seem like a ludicrous question, because when you think of Ponzi schemes, you think of scams. Charles Ponzi's infamous scheme back in the 1920s in Boston revolved around the concept of making an arbitrage with regards to international postage costs. There was really nothing behind it. It had no substance. So when you think about property, you don't really associate it with being a Ponzi scheme because there's something tangible. People are buying bricks and mortar that they can live in. But if you bear with me, I'll go through some details in this video that really looks at how the property developers have been structuring their businesses, how they've been financing their growth. And there are some specific peculiarities relating directly to the Chinese property market and the way that it's financed that actually would enable some of these companies to start building out financial schemes that actually aren't based on property and are more based on being a Ponzi scheme. So in today's episode, we'll have a look at the Chinese property market, how it compares to the rest of the world, because it is very different. We'll then look at how mortgages work in China, because they are also entirely different to anywhere else in the world. We'll have a look at the new build statistics over the last 10 years, and they show something really concerning. We'll then talk about how a Ponzi scheme is actually structured and built up. We'll have a look at the way the property developers have financed their growth. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to whether or not I think the Chinese property market is a Ponzi scheme or whether this is something that's just been sensationalized in the press. So before we get started, if I could ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. I'm on a push now to try to get to 200,000 subscribers. So if you haven't hit that button yet, please do. Don't forget, I always include chapters in these videos, so if you're pushed for time and you don't have time to watch all the video, you can skip through sections. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon, and Amazon links. The property market in China is very different to the rest of the world. If you look at the property markets in the USA, Europe, Australia, they've got a long-standing history of home ownership. People have been buying and owning homes for a long period of time. So the property markets in the Western world are dominated by old stock, houses that were built 50, 60, 70, sometimes more than 100 years ago. And some of these properties have remained in family ownership for long periods of time and get passed down through the generations. So a traditional market is dominated by second-hand homes, properties that people have already lived in. And broadly speaking, around 10% of the market will be new build. So these are properties that developers are building on either greenfield or brownfield sites. They're building either houses or apartments in most cases, and then they're selling them to new buyers. And quite often you can buy those properties off plan. So that means that you can go and speak to the developer. They'll usually have developed walkthroughs and online visualizations to show you exactly what the build will look like once it's completed. And you can sign up in advance to buy one of those properties. And in the Western world, the way that that works is that if you want to buy a property, you'll have to put some form of deposit down, somewhere in the region of 5 or 10% that you pay over to the developer up front to secure that property. And then once that property is completed, you will pay the balance that you owe, so 90 or 95%, over to the developer, and you'll be given the keys and take ownership. And in terms of the financing of that arrangement, most people take a mortgage to buy a property. So a buyer will go and talk to a financial institution and arrange a mortgage. So you may borrow 3 or 4 times your salary, as an example, and that mortgage may constitute 70 or 80% of the purchase price, and the balance will be your deposit that you've built up from your savings. So that's generally how things work in the Western world if you want to buy a new build property. But as I said, the majority of the market, around 90%, is old stock, second-hand housing, houses that have been around for a while. The property market in China is very different. Up until the late 1980s, it was not possible to buy and own your own property. The country was following a strict communist policy, and therefore everybody was given a home to live in. They didn't need to buy it. Nobody was earning significant amounts of money to be able to buy property. That wasn't the way that the country was structured. But in the late 80s and early 90s, things started to change. We saw an element of privatization coming into the Chinese market, and people started to earn money. And the rules were changed, and individuals were allowed to buy property. And what we saw was a housing boom starting to take off. There was a huge amount of aspiration amongst the Chinese population. People wanted to buy property. They wanted to become a homeowner. They wanted to make that purchase. And so we saw a big increase in demand. But the problem that China had at that point was that they only had social housing that was owned by the state. And in order to meet the new increase in demand that had grown up, they needed to build new apartments and new cities. And so a whole industry grew up overnight of property developers that were given the approval to go out and build all of this infrastructure so that people could buy property. And over the last 25 years or so, we have seen an explosion in building, and the property developers have become some of the biggest companies in the world, because these companies have been building entire towns and cities. China has a population of 1.4 billion, and even though it does have large landmass, everybody wanted to live in the cities. So really big developments were constructed. And of course, these developments required huge amounts of finance. So in order to partly finance these developments, the Chinese property developers sold all of the properties off plan. So they were selling to people in advance of building the properties because they needed the cash to be able to help fund the build. Now, you may be thinking that there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, because that's the same process that I just explained to you that happens in the Western world when you want to buy a property that's new build off plan. But there are two big differences to the way the market operates in China. Firstly, the developers were asking for a lot more money than 5 or 10% up front. And secondly, unlike the Western world, the Chinese banks were prepared to offer mortgages in advance of a property being built. In the Western world, mortgage lending is considered by banks and financial institutions as one of the safest bets in terms of loans. And there are two reasons that it's seen as a safe bet. Firstly, it's the largest financial commitment that an individual makes. When you buy your family home, it's something that you want to live in. So you're prepared to take on a large amount of debt. You often borrow 3 or 4 times your annual salary. And because it's such a large financial commitment and it's so important to everybody's everyday life, it's usually the one thing that you make sure that you pay every single month. It's the number one financial priority for most people in the world, to pay their mortgage. And banks are aware of that, and they know that when they give you that loan, it's highly likely that you'll make all of those payments if it's physically possible to do so. The other reason that banks like mortgage lending is because it's secured. They take a legal charge over your property. So in the event that you can't make that mortgage payment, you run out of money, you lose your job, something disastrous happens in your life, in a worst case scenario, the bank can foreclose, they can repossess that property and then sell it in the open market to be repaid. So it's a safe form of lending from a bank's perspective, because they've actually got something sitting behind the loan. It's not just you promising that you will give the money back. If you fail on that promise, they've got something that they can cash in to repay their debt. And a final factor why banks like mortgage lending is that the property market on average tends to be strong. If you look at the long-term trend in property prices, we have seen a massive rise over the last 50 years. So we have seen some dips and blips, obviously when there's a recession or a financial crisis, but in the medium to long term, property goes up in value. So banks know that even in a worst case scenario, if there was a massive recession and they had to take ownership of a whole lot of property, they could use that property to actually generate some income. So we're seeing financial institutions and banks now starting to move into the rented sector. So they're taking ownership of developments and apartment blocks with a view to creating income as a secondary source for those financial institutions. So there's a variety of different factors why banks like mortgage lending. The change in the property rules in China led to this explosion in demand. And in order to fuel that explosion, the banks decided that they would be prepared to lend people money to buy property in advance of that property being built. Now, this concept goes against the established principles of mortgage lending in the Western world. You don't give over the money to the borrower until the property is complete and you can get legal ownership and therefore a legal charge over that property. That gives you comfort as a lender that you've got some fallback in the event of things going wrong. In China, they decided to do things differently. They were prepared to give the borrower all of the money up front, before the property was completed. And this represents an entirely different risk profile because you're giving that loan predominantly against the individual on the promise that they will pay it back rather than the actual value of the property. There is an intention that obviously the mortgage will attach to the property once it's completed. But a semi-completed apartment block is not worth anything. It's actually valueless. So a bank providing a full mortgage against that purchase is really high risk. But that's what the Chinese banks decided they were happy to do. And the reason that they did that is that as demand for these apartments started to increase in China, the property developers started asking for 100% of the purchase price up front. So you needed to pay the full amount of the value of that property before it was even constructed. So this tells you that the market was crazy. It was insane because nobody in their right mind would pay 100% of the purchase price of a property before it's ready because you're taking a huge amount of risk on that development and on that property developer. If they never finish that apartment, then you've given away all of that money and you've got nothing to show for it because nobody can live in a half-completed apartment. But because there was such a frenzy in the market, buyers were prepared to agree to these terms and conditions. Everybody was desperate to get their hands on these apartments. So therefore, they were prepared to take on massive loans with the bank and give away all of that money, including their deposit. So quite often, this was the life savings of that individual. They were handing over all the money they had, plus all of the money they were taking on a maximum loan to these developers, in exchange for an apartment at some point in the future. And one of the other peculiarities about the Chinese property market is that nobody actually owns the property. Everything is on a lease basis. It's generally an 80-year lease that you're granted by the Chinese authorities. So technically speaking, in 80 years' time, that property then reverts back to the state. They take back the ownership. And if you wanted to carry on living in it or owning it, then theoretically, you would have to buy that property back from the Chinese state in 80 years' time. So the Chinese property market is like no other property market on earth. Banks were providing mortgages against fresh air. Borrowers were prepared to hand over the full amount of their life savings plus all of the loan that they'd just taken over to a developer. And the Chinese authorities own all of the property in the long term. In 80 years' time, that property reverts back to the state. This chart shows the year-on-year percentage change in new build starts, which is the red line on this graph, new build completions, which is the dark blue line, and new build sold, which is the light blue line. So if we focus in on sales first, you can see that prior to 2021, the light blue line has been in positive territory, so an increase in the number of units sold year on year. In every year, apart from 2014, which was the last time that China had a minor property crisis. So that's exactly in line with our expectations from what we just talked about, that there's been very strong demand for residential property in China for the last 20 years. But the two things that are concerning about this chart are the number of new build properties started and the new builds completed. The red line shows the number of new builds started. And you can see in the period up until 2016, the number of new builds started was consistently below the number of sales that were being made. And that really doesn't make sense because if you're making those sales, if you know you've got a guaranteed purchase, then you should start that build immediately because you've had all of the money up front and therefore you then need to build it out to give the customer what they've paid for. But what this chart shows is that the developers were selling more and more properties without actually starting them. So they were trading ahead of themselves. There's an old concept in accounting terms called overtrading, where you're actually doing too much business compared to your own capabilities. You can't actually deliver on those many sales. And that was what was happening in the Chinese property market historically. These companies were very good at selling properties, but they weren't as good at building them. So they started building up a backlog of sales. They had more sales than they could deliver upon. But what's even more concerning is if you look at the dark blue line, which shows the number of properties that have been completed, that line drops to the bottom of the chart between 2016 and 2020. So the property companies were selling properties and they were starting properties, but they weren't actually completing them. And obviously, if you're a buyer, you need your property to be completed before you can move in. So we had a nightmare combination where these companies were carrying on selling properties, They started building properties, but they weren't actually finishing them. And one of the reasons for that was that the terms and conditions of the loans would have required the property company to start the project in order to draw down more debt. So it was therefore in their own interest to make a start on the project because that meant another huge amount of cash coming into the bank account. But there was no real incentive to finish it because they'd already been paid by the buyers. They already had all of the debt from the bank. And from a cash flow point of view, it made more sense to actually start another development because you could then get more sales in and draw down more debt. So if you're being generous, this could be referred to as overtrading, but if you're being a bit more pessimistic, you could actually call this a Ponzi scheme because they were using the money that was being given to them by buyers to fund other developments. They weren't actually completing the developments that those buyers wanted. Now, what's happened since 2020 is really interesting because this is after the three red lines was introduced and all of the developers were then in negotiations with the banks and the Chinese authorities as to what they could do and how they could get access to more money. And the Chinese authorities' main focus was on getting a lot of the unfinished apartments completed so that the buyers could then move into those properties. So you can see that from 2020 onwards, the completed line actually overtakes the other two lines and is the only one that moves into positive territory in 2021 because the developers were being told, get those apartments finished. Here is some emergency cash, which has to be used to complete all of the outstanding builds. So that was the main priority. New starts were no longer seen as being important. So we saw a big fall in the number of new starts in 21. And that fall has continued dramatically in 22. And the number of sales has also plummeted. And that's partly because the property developers are being told not to focus on new sales and to get the old stock finished. And partly because there's been a huge fall in confidence in the Chinese market. So nobody actually wants to now buy anything off plan and hand over their life savings and take on a 70% mortgage because they don't know when it's actually going to be built, that property. So it's really interesting to see the way things have moved around. And this chart clearly shows you the impact of the three red lines and how all of the priorities have changed. But the bottom line is, when you look at the 2022 figures, they are terrible. So this shows we've got a massive fall in sales, a massive fall in the number of new builds that are being started, and a massive fall in the number that are being completed. So this chart is a visual representation of a property crash. So what is a Ponzi scheme? Well, it's essentially a scam that depends upon an increasing number of investors. So generally, you come up with an idea, and the most famous in history was Charles Ponzi, who launched his investment scheme in Boston in the 1920s. Now, Charles Ponzi offered investors a potential return of 50% within 45 days or 100% within 90 days. And a lot of investors decided that this was a fantastic opportunity and started handing him large amounts of cash. Now, the way that he provided the 50% return after 45 days was using the money that had been given to him by new investors and handing that cash over to the first lot of investors. And they were then very happy. And of course, that then sent the message out to the market that this return was working. They'd actually received their 50% return. And so news spread and everybody else then wanted to get involved. But the scheme itself wasn't actually investing into anything. It wasn't making any profit. Ponzi was actually just using the cash that was being given to him by new investors to pay out the old investors. Now, the only way that that sort of scheme works for any period of time is if you can keep finding more and more investors, because you take more and more cash, you hand out some of that cash to the first lot of investors and the second lot of investors, you take some off for yourself, some profit, but eventually these schemes collapse because they run out of new investors. They can't keep finding an infinite amount of investors. And at some point then you have to declare that you actually don't have any money, you can't pay anybody any returns, and the whole thing falls apart. Now, clearly the Chinese property market is very different to what Charles Ponzi was doing because he set out to actually defraud everybody. He had no intention of investing the money into anything. He just wanted to take money off people and profit for himself. Now, the Chinese property market's main focus is constructing property. So they have designs and plans to build out all of these huge developments. So there was no formal intention to defraud all of the people of China. But the question that I want to ask is whether or not the financing that's been put in place by the property development companies does have similarities to a Ponzi scheme. So let's have a look at the way property developers have been financing their builds in China. property developers in China have two main costs: the initial purchase of the land and then the build costs. The land in China is owned by the local authorities, and the way that the market operates is that there are monthly auctions for parcels of land, and the developers will come in and bid in these auctions to win that land and then start the build. So let's take a theoretical example of a parcel of land that is auctioned for $20 million. The property development company will need $20 million up front to be able to purchase that land, and they'll hand that over to the local authority. If we assume that the development has build costs of $60 million, and a total gross value of 100. In a lot of situations, the banks will provide 100% loan against the purchase of the land. So in this example, the developer may have borrowed 20 million to buy the land for 20 million. The developer would then borrow to finance the build costs. And let's assume that the developer borrowed 75% of the build costs. So we've got build costs of 60 million here, so the bank may have provided a $45 million loan. So at this point, the property developer has $65 million of debt against a property that will be worth 100 million once it's completed. And they will have provided 15 million of equity to part finance this build. But the benefit that the property developers in China had is that they're able to sell these properties off plan and actually charge all of the buyers 100% of the purchase price. So if you can do the deal, if you can find enough buyers, you can actually sign all of the contracts and then receive $100 million in advance from all of those buyers. Now, theoretically, that $100 million should have been held in escrow. That's the way that the deals were structured. If you take the money in advance, the money should have been put into a special account that the developers couldn't access. But it would appear from commentary that's coming out about the market that a lot of this money was actually used by the property developers. So in the example we've just talked about, the $80 million of cost, the $20 million for the land and $60 million for the build, $15 million of that cost was being provided by equity from the development company. Now, if you were to take that $100 million in cash and use that as your equity stake on other deals, you could start another six projects simultaneously, because that $15 million would be your stake. You could borrow another $65 million and then start another $100 million development. And that's what's been happening in the Chinese market. The huge amount of demand that built up in the market meant that the developers knew that they would be able to sell other developments. So rather than just focusing on one at a time, they decided to start multiple projects. And in order to do that, they used the purchase price from the first development as their stake on the next development. And of course, what then happens is if you start a second development, you can sell all of that development off plan as well. So potentially, you put your $15 million in from the first deal, you borrow $15 million from those first set of buyers. You then use that $15 million as your equity stake. You borrow $65 million from the bank to buy the land and do the build. And then theoretically, you could use that next $100 million to finance another six builds. So you can start seeing how the scheme started to be built up. One sale at the beginning of this process means that you can then start another six. And if you can sell out all of those six projects, then that means that you could start another 36. So you can start seeing how the pyramid builds up. The more you sell, the more you can build, the more you can expand. So you may be thinking, well, that's absolutely fine, because fundamentally at the heart of all of this is property. It's not like Charles Ponzi's scheme where he didn't actually have any investments, so ultimately somebody was going to lose all of their money. If these developers are able to build out all of these projects, then everybody will be happy. But the problem that we have right now is that the authorities in China switched off the access to debt when they brought in the Three Red Lines policy. So the government decided that a lot of these companies were becoming dangerously highly leveraged. They had too much debt and they wanted to rein them in. So they brought in three controls which tested how much debt they had, what their cash flows were and what the leverage was. And a lot of companies defaulted on all three of these measures immediately. And the most famous example is Evergrande. And if you've been following the channel for a while, you'll know that I've posted a lot of videos on Evergrande historically. So once the developers lost access to the debt, it meant that they couldn't finish building all of these semi-constructed sites, all of the sites that they pre-sold to Chinese individuals. They didn't have the cash to be able to finish them. And they couldn't use the cash from the buyers because they'd been using that money to start new projects. So that had all disappeared. So the situation that we're sitting in right now in China is that these property developers have millions and millions of buyers. It's been reported that Evergrande alone has pre-sold 1.6 million apartments that it hasn't completed. They're not built. So these people have handed over their life savings. They've got these mortgages that they're paying every single month for a property that hasn't been constructed. So this is an absolute disaster for those individuals because they're at risk of going bankrupt. They've got nowhere to live. And the property development companies can't complete the construction because they've no longer got access to the money. They've been over-trading. They've been assuming that the good times will never end, that the market will keep going up, prices will keep going up. They can just keep borrowing and borrowing and taking money from the first buyers and using that to start another development and another development and another development. But now that the merry-go-round has stopped and they can't access the debt, they can't complete any of these developments and the money's gone. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video because I've seen a lot of commentary and people making statements about the Chinese property market being a Ponzi scheme. And so I wanted to dig down into the detail and talk about it and go through it with all of you guys. And when you look at other Ponzi schemes, the two most famous in history are Charles Ponzi and Bernie Madoff. Both of those individuals set out to defraud investors. They had no intention of building legitimate businesses. They just wanted to take money off people, get rich themselves, and have a nice lifetime. And unfortunately, both of those individuals got found out. They both got sent to prison, and they're both dead now. Now, the Chinese property market is very different to that because it started out as a legitimate enterprise. There is a huge amount of appetite for property in China. There was a massive amount of demand, and these companies tried to satisfy that demand. So I don't think there was any intention at the start of this process to defraud anybody, to actually set up a Ponzi scheme. But unfortunately, the way the financing was built in China, the fact that banks were prepared to hand over the full amount of a mortgage to a buyer without that property being built, enabled these property development companies to start thinking about doing things differently. They could take all of the purchase price up front, and because they had access to that cash, they could then expand their businesses. And that's exactly what's happened over the last 20 years. All of this cash was swimming around, it was all fungible, and it was being used to start more and more developments. And I think what the companies realized was that it was better for them to start a new development than to waste time finishing the old one, because they'd already taken the profit, they'd already banked that deal, and they wanted to move on to the next one, get access to more capital from the banks, and grow and expand their enterprises. So what we saw over time was that these companies were taking money from the original set of investors and using it for the benefit of other investors. So essentially, it became a Ponzi scheme. It's exactly the same principles. When you look at the fundamentals, you've got out of control because you're growing too fast. You're using money from one end of your business to finance the other end of the business. And that isn't sustainable. So by definition, these companies have become very akin to a Ponzi scheme. And like any of these schemes, the only reason that it comes to light is because something happens to expose it. And the thing that happened in the Chinese market is the authorities decided to stop all of the lending. They cut off the supply of debt that was fueling this growth. And as soon as that happened, these companies have been exposed as insolvent. They don't have enough cash to be able to finish all of the builds that they've started. And unfortunately, the Chinese citizens who've been buying all of these properties and handing over all of the money to the property developers are the ones who are going to lose out. So as with any Ponzi scheme, it's the investors who ultimately have to carry the can. It's their money that will disappear forever. So my overall assessment here is that I don't think the Chinese property market set out to be a Ponzi scheme. It wasn't built to defraud the citizens of China. But unfortunately, the way that it's grown and developed, it took on a lot of the characteristics of a Ponzi scheme, and people are now going to lose a huge amount of money. So hopefully you've enjoyed today's episode. You found it interesting, educational, and thought-provoking. If you've liked what I've said, then please give me a thumbs up, and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.